Breaking news now. Dominion voting systems say they categorically deny any and all of President Trump's claims that their voting machines caused any voter fraud in key swing states or electoral fraud. But reports contradict that claim. In 2016, a senior executive at Dominion told the Illinois State Board of Elections that it is possible to bypass their election system software. Here's what the vice president of engineering at Dominion at that time, Eric Coomer, told the board during a meeting in good old Cook County.
No, we are not allowed to do routine updates without having to go through a recertification effort, but we do routinely give guidance on how to best secure systems. And also going back again to the final mitigation against all of this is a robust auditing and canvassing process, which all of our jurisdictions have implemented.
Coomer said no updates can be done without recertification, as you heard. Mr. Coomer's assurances of a secure system, however, are contradicted by the fact that various vendors, election officials, and others reportedly can access the voting machine code without an update being required. And we know that there were updates on those machines a day before the election. Well, joining us tonight is Sidney Powell, a member of President Trump's legal team, General Flynn's defense attorney, a great American and prominent appellate lawyer. Great to have you with us, Sidney. Let's start with Dominion. A straight out disavowal of any claim of fraud against the company, its software or machines. Your reaction?
Well, I can hardly wait to put forth all the evidence we have collected on Dominion, starting with the fact it was created to produce altered voting results in Venezuela for Hugo Chavez and then shipped internationally to manipulate votes for purchase in other countries, including this one. It was funded by money from Venezuela and Cuba, and China has a role in it also. So if you want to talk about foreign election interference, we certainly have it now. We have staggering statistical evidence. We have staggering testimony from witnesses, including one who was personally in briefings when all of this was discussed and planned, beginning with Hugo Chavez and how it was designed there, and then saw it happening in this country. As soon as the state shut down on election night and stopped counting, those are the states where the most egregious problems occurred. We also need to look at and are beginning to collect evidence on the financial interests of some of the governors and secretaries of state who actually bought into the Dominion systems, surprisingly enough. Hunter Biden type graft to line their own pockets by getting a voting machine in that would either make sure their election was successful or they got money for their family from it.
Well, that's straightforward. It may take, you're going to have to be quick to go through and to produce that investigation and the results of it. The December deadlines are approaching for electors, and just as we saw in 2000 with Bush v. Gore, how critical are those deadlines and how urgent does that make your investigation and discovery?
Well, for fraud this serious, I think even if the states are stupid enough to go ahead and certify the votes where we know the machines were operating and producing altered election results, if they're stupid enough to do that, then they will be set aside by the fraud also. I mean, we are talking about hundreds of thousands of votes. President Trump won this election in a landslide. It's going to be irrefutable, and patriots are coming forward every day, all day, faster than we can collect their information with the testimony they're willing to give under oath about how their votes were stolen and how the machines operated. They were updated the night of the election, sometimes after the election. We've got statistical evidence that shows hundreds of thousands of votes being just put in and replicated. There needs to be a massive criminal investigation, and it's going to affect millions of voters and elections.
With these allegations, these charges, is the FBI already carrying out an investigation of these voting companies where their servers are domiciled? And in at least three instances, we know they're in foreign countries. Tell us where the Justice Department is in all of this.
I wish I knew. I'm not on the inside, so I'm not privy to that information. I know that even Democratic senators and congresspeople for years have reported problems with this system to the FBI and to the government, and nobody's done a blooming thing about it. The people in the election security part of Department of Homeland Security need to be fired yesterday. They're absolutely ridiculous. Of course, Chris Wray needs to be fired too, because the only FBI interview of any witness was to intimidate him and try to get him to change his truthful testimony 4 hours by an anti-Trump FBI agent. They still have politics infecting the FBI instead of just following the law. We are on the precipice of, this is essentially a new American revolution. And anybody who wants this country to remain free needs to step up right now. These are federal felonies. Altering a vote or changing a ballot is a federal felony. People need to come forward now and get on the right side of this issue and report the fraud they know existed in Dominion voting systems, because that's what it was created to do. It was its sole original purpose. It has been used all over the world to defy the will of people who wanted freedom.
Cindy, at the outset of this broadcast, I said that this is the culmination of what has been over a four-year effort to overthrow this president, to first deny his candidacy, the election, but then to overthrow his presidency. This looks like the effort to carry out an end game in the effort against him. Do you concur?
Oh, absolutely. And it's been organized and conducted with the help of Silicon Valley people, the big tech companies, the social media companies, and even the media companies. And I'm going to release the Kraken.
Well, good, because this is an extraordinary and such a dangerous moment in our history. I really am very concerned for the country. I am very concerned for all Americans. And I have a feeling that most Democrats are first Americans and not Democrats. They have to be as alarmed as any one of us. Cindy, we're glad that you are on the charge to straighten out all of this. It is a foul mess, and it is far more sinister than any of us could have imagined, even over the course of the past 4 years. You get the last word, Sydney.
It is indeed a very foul mess. It is farther and wider and deeper than we ever thought, but we are going to go after it, and I am going to expose every one of them.
Sydney Powell, thanks for being with us, and thanks for all that you're doing.
This is the Eric Mashugana Show.
Right.
I'm schwitzing because my guest is, have you heard of the stone that the builders rejected? We didn't get that stone. That stone lives inside me. But we got Roger Stone. Roger, every time you come on here, I get happy. Thank you for coming on. And we just want to know why you're wearing a hat indoors. Go ahead.
It's called a bad hat day, bad hair day.
Oh, I see.
Well, we're off to a good start today.
That's a great. No, listen.
In all honesty, I was up very late writing, and therefore I overslept this morning. So you get to see one of my nicer Panama hats.
I love it. We have so much to cover. What is happening in this country as of now, as of today, Friday the 13th, November? What do you see happening in this election right now?
Well, I wrote a very long piece at stonecoldtruth.com that posted very late.
At what?
Stonecoldtruth.com.
Okay.
Which is the website that I operated prior to the FBI raiding my house, shutting the site down, and then a court order that prohibited me from having any mass communications whatsoever. Unconstitutional, you say? Yes, it was, but that doesn't stop the deep state.
Anyway, that's why we're in this battle, as you know.
Exactly. So stonecoldtruth.com is back up, and I'm trying to be as prodigious a writer as I can, posting some videos there as well. So there's a very long piece on the path forward for President Trump. Let me try to capsulize it, though. What we're seeing today is the largest example of mass hypnosis that I've ever seen in my life. It's a hoax. What you have is a pact between the mainstream media, the broadcast media, particularly television networks, cable news networks, and so on, and their digital allies in Silicon Valley to enforce one narrative, to censor anyone who disagrees with the proposition that Joe Biden has been elected president and that he has been selected by a majority of those casting legal ballots. And that is not the case. If you are audacious enough to say on television or cable that there's very substantial, compelling, and in fact, overwhelming evidence of voter fraud, you will immediately be silenced. You'll be banned for telling the truth.
Now, this has been happening to some extent, even on Fox News. Sean Hannity and obviously Tucker, and I assume Laura Ingraham, have been saying this. But even they seem to me to have to be careful what they say.
It appears that you have a decision made by corporate management to move Fox News to be more like CNN. In other words, less profitable, first and foremost, lower ratings, secondarily, and you know, kind of the same old, same old. If we want to be lied to, we can go to CBS or NBC. Why do we need to go to Fox? So they're doing is creating an enormous void, a vacuum into which other conservative media outlets are stepping in, will step. The viewership at Newsmax is up very sharply. The viewership at OANN is up very shortly.
Excuse me, the viewership on this program on YouTube is stunningly up from what it was a few weeks ago. We've never seen anything like it. It's our YouTube channel, The Eric Metaxas Show. And I think there's a revolution happening. And the only thing I didn't expect was that Fox would do something this foolish.
I'm delighted that your ratings are up. It's one of the reasons why I'm here. But secondarily, the danger, of course, is that your YouTube channel can be taken from you at any moment. See, I learned the hard way by running up a big followership on Twitter and on Facebook, on Instagram, that all of that can disappear in an instant when the deep state decides that you're too dangerous a truth teller and you've got to be silenced. So I urge those who are building a following, who are out there telling the truth, to not only feature it on YouTube, but build it at your own platform where you can't be cut off at the knees, at least not at this point.
Okay, that's the daily reminder to my viewers that they should go to ericmetaxas.com, sign up for our newsletter, which is a weekly newsletter. We've been sending it more often recently because we've been having every other night prayer meetings with a certain group. I want to say the next one is Sunday at 8 p.m. Prayer is what is fueling the truth-telling. Anybody doubts that, see me after class. Continue.
Look, I'm living proof. The fact that I'm even sitting here demonstrates that prayer works, shows that God is almighty and that he can do anything, and that God hates injustice and he hates lying. I wouldn't be with you today if that was not the case. And I may or may not be the stone in the Kim Clement prophecy, the stone that saves the country, but I'm sure I'm trying. And I'm prepared to do whatever God directs me to do. And right now what he directs me to do is to call BS on this entire fake news narrative. I've been in American politics for 40 years. I've examined the evidence. I posted a link to the most comprehensive and compelling evidence at Stone Cold Truth. No, folks, the evidence does exist. It is compelling. It will be compelling in court. The proper lawsuits are being brought at the state level. There's at least five of them. The president needs to flip two states to win this. He needs to demonstrate overwhelming and convincing fraud in just two states. If he loses in all five cases, which is unlikely but possible, he has the right to appeal any of them to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court has already ruled on a number of the underlying issues at hand. And consequently, I believe when the smoke clears, to the great shock of the folks at CNN and MSNBC, Donald Trump will still be your president.
Okay, now that's an amazing statement. I agree with it. But for most people, that's an amazing statement. In the little time that we have, tell us why you're so convinced that's the case.
Well, first of all, there is a process here. We're not done when ABC and the Associated Press say we are. The media does not choose who the president is. They have no legal right to declare anybody president. Only the Electoral College can do that. And we have a long way to go between now and the Electoral College meeting in the middle of December. Right. The president has more than enough legal arguments to overturn a number of these state elections and award the delegates, pardon me, the electors correctly, as required by law, to the person who won the majority of the legal ballots cast. That's where we are. So hang on. This has got three more rounds to go. You have the courts. You have the state legislatures, which must send the ballots, the electors, to the Electoral College, and the Electoral College itself. Nothing is over until we say it is.
I've been saying for years, since I wrote my book, If You Can Keep It, that we are in an existential crisis as a nation, similar to 1776 and 1860, and that we have to look back to the heroes of that time to be motivated in our own existential crisis to survive, so that our way of life, self-government by the people, for the people, that would survive. Many people haven't really taken that very seriously. They kind of shrug. I myself never dreamt it could get this bad. Where we are now today with the gaslighting of the American public by CNN and the New York Times and on, just as you've said, it is genuinely out of 1984. In other words, it's the sort of thing that, you know, sometimes there are people who lie, and then there are people who double down on the lie so much that if they took a lie detector, they completely believe what they're saying. We're witnessing something now. As you said, it's a mass hypnosis, a mass hysteria, unlike anything, not even close to anything any of us in American life has witnessed. You have to go back to the Germans believing in their messiah, Adolf Hitler, to see this kind of fervor in the wrong direction. We're going to be right back talking to Roger Stone. His website is stonecoldtruth.com. Folks, I'm talking to Roger Stone. Yes, the Roger Stone. Why would you doubt that he would come on this program now that our ratings are exploding? His website, by the way, you need to know of it. It's stonecoldtruth.com. Our website is ericmetaxas.com. Roger, you were just saying that big tech is so in the bag for China, for the cultural Marxists in this country, that they are, as you have experienced, deplatforming those of us with whom they disagree. And it really reminds me, and this is, you know, it's pathetic when you have to bring up Germany in the 30s, but there's just enough legality. In other words, if you look at what happened in Germany in the 30s, it was not Iraq under Saddam Hussein. It still had the pretense, the veneer of legality. There was just enough legality that the New York Times and Time magazine would send in their people and say, no, there's still courts and there's still order. And, you know, even in 1931, Hitler was hailed before a court because of the murder of some people. It really is where we are now. In other words, they are smart enough not to declare themselves dictators for life. They pretend that we still have democracy. But the reality is, the moment you step over a line, boom, you go to jail, or Twitter jail, or whatever it is. You've experienced this. Do you believe that between now and when this president is declared the winner, I should say, what do you suppose will happen? Because when you're in a battle to the death, as we are with the people on the other side of this, they seem to me at this point to be willing to do anything. I just never dreamt we would get here, and I kind of wonder what can happen from here.
Well, if you read this book, Playbook, by one of the key ringleaders in this hoax that's being perpetrated on the American people, we know the last step of this. If the mass censorship and the wholesale theft of votes on the ground, both through computer programs and through the old-fashioned way of Democratic machine vote stealing, don't work, well, then there's the third step of their plan, which is using Black Lives Matters and Antifa hoodlums to beat and pillage and rape and burn and threaten their way into power. They're withholding that step to see if it's necessary, but it's very clearly, based on their own comments, it's the next step for them. The real tragedy, of course, is that the president had 4 years to bring antitrust action against all these social media platforms, and his attorney generals, attorney general Jeff Sessions, his attorney general, his acting attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, a man who belongs in prison based on his lies to Congress and his seditious activities in the Russian collusion hoax. And then lastly, Bill Barr, have done nothing, nothing. It's why we're in this situation today. Really pathetic. We have to hope that in a second term, the president will finally order his Justice Department to enforce the antitrust laws and end the monopolistic practices of the YouTubes and the Facebooks and the Twitters and the Instagrams and the others who are deeply complicit in this effort to foist a phony election result on the American people. It's not just, as I say, the old-fashioned Democratic big city style of stealing votes. In other words, phony absentee votes, monkeying with the mail-in voting, ballot harvesting, people voting multiple times, people who aren't registered voting, people who are dead voting, people who are voting, as I say, in the name of others. Those are all standard, but you have bigger, even more odious evidence of massive manipulation of the vote through the Hammer program utilized by the U.S. government, specifically a subset of that called Scorecard. There's now massive evidence that the Dominion voting machines that are in use in at least seven states were manipulated. So this is a big picture thing. I actually saw Karl Rove, a man who always reminds me of a wax pear that sat too long on the radiator, say the other night that there couldn't be voter fraud this extensive. It would take too immense a conspiracy. Wake up, Carl. I just outlined it for you. Take a look at the Hammer. Take a look at Dominion. Yes, there's the mass manipulation of votes.
If you want to know whether Karl Rove is more like Bush 41 than Donald Trump, that says it all. I mean, it's an unbelievable thing that he could be that naive. It's actually scary to me at this point. You know, what is happening?
When do you think the last time Carl did a sit-up was? When would that be?
All right, anyway, that's uncalled for. You claim to be a Christian. Now you stop that. Now
look, just that's just teasing.
On, I know.
The Bible says thou shalt not tease. I didn't see that one. Go ahead.
I do nothing but tease. That's my love language. I got to tell you, seriously, Roger, the key to me right now, and this is what everybody has to be tuned in for, is that the radical cultural Marxist left, like the National Socialists, they will use democracy until they have no other options. In other words, if they can fool us into thinking that they're using a democratic process in order to seize undemocratic power, they will do that. And then the moment that fails, they go to plan B, Antifa, take to the streets. The reason I have the Nazis on my brain, other than the fact that I wrote a big book on the Nazis, which came out 10 years ago now, it's the playbook, and it happens over and over again. We have people, for example, like Christiane Amanpour, saying something for which she should be fired. I don't care if she said it on CNN, but she compared Trump to Hitler and Kristallnacht. It's just one of the most grievous sick things to say, but people are willing to pretend that they're against authoritarianism when they themselves are trafficking in authoritarianism. That's what's so ugly. They pretend to be for democracy. And then the moment it fails, they get violent. Obviously, the Nazis had this plan. It's why Hitler was, he was on trial in 1931 before he became chancellor. And he kept saying, we're peaceful, but then there was something that Goebbels had written, a pamphlet, that basically says, yes, we will be peaceful and we will use democracy and on and on and on, but that's only the ends, that's only so that we can get to where we want to go, which is to use our fists to bring about revolution. And by the way, if we need to use our fists, the goal is revolution. The goal is not playing patty cake with von Papen or any of those folks. We mean to crush democracy using democracy itself, if we can fool people into think that that's what we're doing. That's what I see happening.
Well, we've seen this from the beginning. In fact, the left always consistently accuses us of exactly that which they are doing. Let's take Russian collusion. The only known Russian collusion in the 2016 election was Hillary Clinton getting the assistance of Russian intelligence to write the phony Steele dossier, which she paid for by money laundering funds through her law firm, which was used as the entire and sole basis for the launching of a fraudulent investigation with the purposes of removing the president. There's your Russian collusion. The Democrats and the left always accuse us of what they're going to do. For example, the Proud Boys are going to be harassing and intimidating and suppressing the vote across the country at polling places on Election Day. Really, where did that happen? That didn't happen anywhere. If there was any voter suppression going on, it was on behalf of the Democrats. The lingering threat that if we don't like the results of the election, we're going to burn America down, that's not coming from the right. That's not coming from Christians or conservatives or Republicans. That's coming from the radical left, Antifa and BLM. Why should we take them serious? They've already demonstrated that they have the funding, the organization, the structure, the bail money to do exactly that. They've already done it in a number of American cities.
And don't forget the rented bicycles. By the way, I want to tell you something. This weekend in Washington, D.C., there's going to be a massive, massive gathering of pro-Trump people, and BLM and Antifa are planning to cause trouble. I hope people listening to this will pray for peace, because it's, I think it may get ugly in D.C. this weekend, and we may see some things that we didn't want to see in America.
Well, I think it's very, very important, and I write this today at Stone Cold Truth, that mobilization, large numbers across the country are vital in terms of, to peacefully protest what's going on. If you think about it, during the media blackout in the closing days of the campaign, one of the ways that Trump kind of jumped the shark and got out of that cul-de-sac was through his rallies that had massive, massive attendance. It's very tough to say Trump has no chance in Michigan when 50,000 people are greeting him on the ground in Michigan. In other words, disproving this entire hoax in which Joe Biden is locked down in his basement. He is hailed by crowds of hundreds, if that. They bring him out every once in a while just to prove that he's alive. There's no evidence of intensity, but we keep seeing polls that show him, oh, ABC it's says correct. He's up 17 in Wisconsin. See, that's part of the psyop.
I knew this wouldn't be enough time. My apologies to you, Roger. We've got to get you on next week. There is so much more. In our next segment, Dinesh D'Souza will be weighing in. Folks, stay tuned. Please go to stonecoldtruth.com. Roger, thank you.
Thank you, and God bless you, Eric.
Welcome to today's edition of the Rush 24/7 podcast.
Michigan has been at the center of all of the patterns that we can see in our gut. You coordinated with other states, apparently, stopped counting, and then ballots arrived, and much more than that. State Senator Eric Nesbitt, boots on the ground in Michigan. He joins us now on the Rush Limbaugh program. Senator Nesbitt, welcome to Rush's show. It's Todd Herman filling in.
Hey, thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor. And I'm sorry I have to talk about these issues, though.
Well, I think that you are speaking to the world's largest audience of Republicans and independents as well, and even some Democrats, and people need to know. So what's going on in Michigan?
Well, our new Secretary of State, I think, has just been a complete disaster. And this is even going back earlier this year in the August primary, the 2020 primary, when the nonpartisan, the State Board of Canvassers, on a bipartisan vote, demanded that the Secretary of State must do a better job ensuring processes are followed here in Detroit. You got to remember, the Republicans have had the Secretary of State's office for quite a while, and in 2018, George Soros and a bunch of left-wing Democratic money dumped in a lot to elect Jocelyn Benson. I call her gerrymander Jocelyn. And this is something where they just don't care who actually, you know, whether the votes are legal or not, or whether they're valid. And back in the primary, actually, after a review of this, 72% of Detroit's absentee counting boards could not be reconciled in the August primary. That means the votes didn't add up.
Wait, did you say sorry, Senator. Did you just say 72%?
Of Detroit's absentee counting boards could not be reconciled in the August primary. Nearly three quarters. Half of all precincts could not be reconciled. And when they're not reconciled, they can't be recounted under Michigan law. And so that means that we had, I think, over 70 precincts that were off by at least a half a dozen votes without explanation. And so that means you have a massive number of ballots. This is going back. This is when all the people are running were Democrats against Democrats in the primary in Detroit, right? And so they have a close election, and they can't even recount these counting boards. But you got to remember that this is the same Secretary of State, Gerrymander Jocelyn, that spent over a half of the $11 million of federal COVID-19 money to get to promote vote by mail. She mailed unsolicited absentee ballot applications to 7 million people and admitted she included people in her office who surrendered their license to another state, people that had died, people that had moved out of state, people that no longer live in the current house. I was hearing folks, former constituents from the west side of Michigan that moved to Ohio and Oregon. They were getting ballot applications. And so we have hundreds of examples of these absentee ballot applications that were sent to people who are dead, have moved, or are non-citizens. And then she told local clerks just to issue ballots even if they get a completed application back, even if they were flagged in the qualified voter file as having surrendered their license to another state without first verifying their signature, without first verifying their actual address. And we figure there is probably 500,000 to 800,000 absentee ballot applications that were sent out this summer to people that shouldn't have received them.
Astonishing. Eric Nisbet is with us. Nisbet, he is a state senator in the state of Michigan. Astonishing. I think we knew there was stink, but the rot, I mean, this is so deep. And we've heard as well in Michigan, and maybe you don't know, maybe you weren't there, but we've heard about Republican poll watchers, observers being told to leave because the State Department of Health during ballot counting. So I'd like to hear what you know to be the case and what you've observed in Michigan as you're there.
So last week, Wednesday morning, I'm getting up from being up all night through election night. We have an 18-month-old daughter, and she was up for about an hour and a half, so I was rocking her. But I get up about 8:30. My wife was at work, and she sends me a text at 8:30 in the morning saying, "This stuff's for real. I'm heading to Detroit." And I said, "At least take one of our friends." And so she went with one of our friends to Detroit on Wednesday morning. And what she saw there was just unbelievable. And so I have firsthand account of what was going on from my wife, Tricia. And she was there were many more Democrats and Republicans allowed to watch the process. And the liberal activists were being counted as, quote unquote, independent observers. She kept telling me that this was a 3-to-1 ratio of Democrats to Republicans at these counting boards. I'm like, I don't believe you. And then she was saying that they were cheering every time that they found some reason to kick some Republican, either ballot poll challenger, ballot watcher, or attorney out of the room. There was applause going on. Election workers were cheering whenever they were being kicked out for things like they adjusted their face mask. They were too close to actually watching the ballot. This is something where some of the poll trainers in the city of Detroit were saying, you know what, we're going to make sure these Republican poll watchers have to use binoculars to watch what's going on in the city of Detroit. Democrats running this process behaved outrageously. You demand we have confidence in the process. This is something where my wife said she was in the room, and she said with the counting boards that were set up, and as I said, there was three Democrats for every one Republican, so the Republicans couldn't count, you know, couldn't be at every counting board that were there. But she says where there wasn't a Republican challenger, that's where the boards were being counted. Where she was at her board, they just were trying to wait her out. They didn't want to count when they had a Republican poll challenger in front of you. And so I think this is refusing to count ballots when Republicans are closely observing. You know, just allow a little transparency in. If there's nothing to hide, why wouldn't they allow that to happen? And you got to also remember the judge, you know, the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee filed some lawsuits to say, hey, let's make sure that every valid ballot is being cast. And it was thrown out, I think it was Thursday morning. But you got to remember the same judge that did this ruling last week was the same judge in early October that attempted to impose ballot harvesting in the state of Michigan, which is illegal in the state, and also wanted to allow ballots to arrive 2 weeks after Election Day, which also goes against state statutes. Talk about an activist judge. Thankfully, this judge was overturned on appeal a month ago on creating statute, creating new laws, but it shows that liberal activists in the judiciary are attempting from every angle to tilt the playing field in their direction. And you see this in not just in Detroit, but you move up to Rochester in Oakland County, where a county commission candidate, Republican, who is the incumbent, thought he lost on Wednesday morning, you know, the day after the election, thought he lost by 100 votes. As they were going through the ballots 2 days later, they discovered they double-counted absentee ballots, and they actually had won by 1,000 votes.
Incredible.
So let's be a little patient, and let's make sure we have every vote legally counted.
I hope that the people who witnessed this, your wife or friends, the people who witnessed this are under affidavit. I hope that they will testify. I mean, you're state senator, and you're not going to put your reputation on the line for something that you can't back up. We've got about 1 minute left on Rush's show. What do you say? Look, you're all across the state of Michigan right now, your entire state. So what do you say to people who have witnessed ballot fraud or know that dead loved ones got a vote counted when they were dead?
Well, I would... have them contact, I'd have them contact the state party of the Trump campaign. B, I would also have them reach out to State Senator Ruth Johnson. She was our Secretary of State for 8 years. She's now a colleague of mine. And she's collecting all these instances of absentee ballot applications that went to the wrong people, any evidence that there's mishaps going on. And I do think the legislature has an obligation to review the concerns raised by our constituents about the possibility of election fraud, provide a forum to address those concerns. We're disenfranchising my constituents on this side of the state if they're not able to do a recount and properly count the votes on the other side of the state. And so that's the reason why the Senate formed last Saturday. We got together, the Senate House Oversight Committee with Senator McBroom and Representative Matt Hall, to the two chairs, and they issued subpoenas to the Secretary of State, to the City of Detroit Clerk, to Good. Try to get to the bottom of this to make sure we have integrity in our election process.
We have to have that, or this nation is in very, very deep trouble. We've been joined by Eric Nesbitt. He's a state senator in the state of Michigan. Eric, appreciate you coming on, Senator. Go with God's good grace. Thanks for joining us on Rush's show today.
Hey, God bless you, Todd. Thanks for everything you're doing.
Of course. Todd Herman in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB Network.
Folks, welcome back. As I warned you, we would have amazing guests. We got Dinesh D'Souza back today. Before we ask him where he thinks we are, I want to remind you, folks, if you go to MyPillow.com, whatever you do, don't use any of the codes you see on TV. Use the code ERIC. I can't tell you why, but if you use the code ERIC at MyPillow, you'll get the most comfortable discount you've ever seen or your money back. Dinesh D'Souza, welcome.
Hey, Gary, great to be on the show.
Listen, there was so much left unsaid yesterday, so I'm glad that you can be here. A lot has happened overnight. Where do you think we are? What strikes you as the most important developments, and what do you see for the near future?
Well, I think the big question for Trump is whether or not there is persuasive legal evidence of shenanigans. And I don't mean episodic shenanigans, a dead guy here, a dead guy there, who mysteriously showed up at the polls, but systematic evidence that shows that could make a difference, particularly in the key states. I'm thinking here specifically of Pennsylvania. There are statistical anomalies, I would even say statistical impossibilities, but these need to point to some, you need to be able to say how these occurred. And I think that's the big question for the Trump legal team.
Okay, but why do you need to prove this? In other words, if you go into a judge and you say something, I'm just making this up, but you know, 104% of the registered voters voted, is that not enough for the judge to rule somehow, or can they only rule narrowly? Do you have to lead them exactly by the dots?
No, it's true that a judge could then say that that is prima facie evidence of fraud. Now, the judge could then say, well, that fraud is at the 4% level. It's 4% over the number of people who could have voted. And maybe the difference in the state is much bigger than 4%. Now, that's one possibility. The other thing to remember, temperamentally, judges tend to prefer the narrow road to the wide road. So what I mean by that is that if you go to a judge in Pennsylvania and say, we're giving you two choices, throw out all the votes in Pennsylvania and let's have a revote, option A, or B, let's look at the way in which a judge in Pennsylvania extended the balloting for 3 days in flat contravention of state law. So those ballots that came in after 8 p.m. and were counted, those ballots are invalid. A judge is more likely temperamentally to go, yeah, you know what, that's a kind of a clean hit. I'm going to go with you on that one.
But I thought that was already ruled yesterday. I thought that was ruled yesterday in Pennsylvania.
Actually, no. The decision yesterday was about the Secretary of State extending the deadline. But those votes have still been segregated and they've still been counted and they have not been ruled invalid yet. In fact, that was why Alito sent a note demanding that the votes be kept separate, pending a potential Supreme Court decision that says those ballots cannot be included.
But doesn't it seem reasonable to think that they would not be included?
I think it does. I think that's kind of probably to me the cleanest win for Trump on that. Now, I don't know if those votes are sufficient by themselves to give him the state of Pennsylvania. I've heard kind of conflicting testimony on that point. Trump would need to win Pennsylvania and something else. If he won Arizona and then won Pennsylvania, he's still the president. But even if he won Pennsylvania by itself, he would still need some more electoral votes to put him over the top.
Michigan, Wisconsin, other states seem still to be in play. We heard, I don't know if it was this morning or last night, about some things that went on in Detroit. We keep hearing about these Dominion voting machines. I guess it was just the news John Solomon reported late last night that the folks who were hired to run the Dominion voting machines in Detroit were the people paying for that were very closely connected to, I don't know if it's the mayor of Detroit, but who is currently in jail. In other words, we're talking about a corrupt Democratic big machine in that city, which is no surprise. But there seems to be a lot of that kind of thing that we're hearing every day. It doesn't seem silly. It seems like there's probably something there.
No, the guy who has the patent on those Dominion machines is apparently an Antifa guy, and his postings are all over the internet. So this is a guy who's not just a leftist, but he's a guy who's sort of on the far left and an Antifa sort of sympathizer. That's one point. I saw Sidney Powell, General Flynn's attorney, post today that it appears that in Michigan they did the same data dump multiple times. In other words, the same votes were submitted more than once to be counted again and again and again. And this was a 70%, 70 to 30 benefit to Biden. So imagine if that's the case. If you can show that the same 100,000 votes distributed 70 for 30 for Biden were submitted multiple times and counted multiple times, I mean, that would be prima facie evidence of fraud.
Well, Dinesh, I mean, I think we have to acknowledge Sidney Powell is not some kooky person. Sidney Powell is a profoundly sober person, a legal genius. For her to say this, I have to say, that's rather big news to me. I had not heard that before. Actually, forgive me, we're going to go to a break. Folks, I'm talking to Dinesh D'Souza. In hour two, I get to have a long conversation with his daughter about her brand new book. It's called The Choice. It's about abortion. Looking forward to that. Don't go away. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking again today with Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh, you mentioned Sidney Powell, whom I think of as being as serious a person when it comes to these kinds of issues as is out there. No conspiracy theorist, no black marks in her book. When she makes this claim, she puts this out there that in a state like Michigan, which was definitely going for Trump on the evening of the vote and then suddenly seems to have flipped over, she makes the claim that in that state, some votes were submitted several times. She's not the kind of person that I would lightly doubt on something like that. I mean, do you know more about that?
Well, here's the other thing, and that is that these kinds of things are occurring all over the place. In Pennsylvania, for example, I saw a data analysis by a very smart guy showing that the Trump votes were running about 7% ahead of the other Republicans on the down ballot. And this was consistent throughout the election day. And then you remember the counting stopped and it was resumed later. And then suddenly the pattern changed. The other Republicans continued to hold forth. They continued their pattern, but Trump took a nosedive. And this would almost be as if tens of thousands of Republican voters suddenly stopped voting at the presidential level. They didn't vote for Trump, or they maybe voted for Biden, but they voted Republican down the ticket. Now think of how bizarre that is, that not all the Republicans took a nosedive, but only Trump, almost as if the fix was in, but the fix was in only at the presidential level.
Well, this leads me to another question. We all talk about how the counting stopped. Yesterday, I sent out a tweet that, for me, the big red flag, in other words, for people who are not in the weeds and who are not political prognosticators, we all saw what seemed to me six swing states roughly simultaneously on election night stop counting. And then when they began counting again or when they decided to come back, suddenly the votes had shifted dramatically in favor of Biden. Now, what am I missing there? And why would one state, any state, declare that they're going to stop counting? And then the second question is, how is it possible that six swing states would simultaneously make that call? I have no answer to that.
There is no answer to that. Now, there is a counter argument that should be considered, and that is the Democrats would say, look, it is not all that odd that the later votes that were counted sort of post-election day went overwhelmingly for Biden because we Democrats voted by mail. The Republicans all showed up on election day, so the bulk of their votes were sort of right there to be counted. But as the mail-in ballots were counted, it is not peculiar that Biden would have the majority of those. But here's my point. Why would the pattern in the swing states and the swing states alone differ from the patterns around the country? Because there were mail-in ballots in the other states too. It wasn't that only the swing states had mail-in balloting. There was mail-in balloting in other places as well.
But let's say you give them that, okay? I understand that. That's at least plausible. We should take it into account. But my question, or the two questions are still, why was the counting stopped? I'm not really familiar with other instances in past elections. Maybe I didn't notice it. But why suddenly would counting stop? What's the point of that, number one? Number two, why would that happen roughly simultaneously in six swing states? It looks like a plan, perhaps a conspiracy. Who gave the signal? That's baffling to me. And I think that's the big red flag. Every American says, I don't understand. Can somebody explain to me why votes were stopped, why counting was stopped? and why this happened in only those states? What was going on? What do you say?
So there is no good reason for that. And I think, in fact, what makes things really chilling is the possibility that election night was nothing more than an information collecting mechanism to decide how many Biden votes are really needed. Because if you remember back to election night 2016, I remember I was sort of exhilarated because Trump was leading Biden by 50,000 votes. Now, on this election night, 4 years later,
Trump, Hillary, I know.
Yeah, Trump was leading by 600,000 votes. So it's almost as if the post-vote counters needed that number because they needed to know how many votes they needed to get. If they went for just 50,000 and they miscalculated, Trump would still win by 550,000 votes. They needed to know how many votes we need to put on the board in order to change the outcome. Remember the Pennsylvania's attorney general saying, before the count, before the election, there is no way that Trump is going to win Pennsylvania. He literally made that I remember what a strange thing for the man in charge of overseeing the election process to say in a swing state that there is no way that Trump can win Pennsylvania. But he said it, and it's out there. And of course, it came true, but it came through this mysterious process of day one counting, Trump way in the lead, and then voila, here are all the buckets of votes, and gee, we won after all.
I'm just aghast that we're in the United States of America and this is happening. You've been warning about it for years. I've been warning about it in my own way. This has been the drift. And until something becomes as dramatic as this has come, many people don't wake up. They think, well, whatever. They shrug. This is unbelievable to me. What you just said then is that you do believe that it is telling that six swing states stopped voting, that this is not something, because people on the left just saying, shut up, shrug it off, you're making this up. I think to myself, explain to me why I'm making it up. Explain to me why that is not bizarre. You're agreeing that it was bizarre.
Yes, I'm very disturbed by a trend throughout the culture of the left and the Democrats feeling sort of no desire to take seriously arguments on the other side, no consideration of valid points that are being made. And Joe Biden himself, you'd think that if Joe Biden wanted to assure the legitimacy of his victory, he'd be the first one saying, hey, listen, I won fair and square. If there's any question here, let's take a hard look. Let's check out these instances, because ultimately the winner has an interest in establishing that the process was fair. You know, if somebody said, for example, to LeBron James, hey, listen, every time you go for the basket, the net drops 6 inches, he'd be the one the most outraged. He'd go, no, my competence as a player depends on the idea. Come take a look. I'm playing by the same rules as everybody else. But the eerie silence from the Democrats, it's almost like the winner's declaring, we won, it's over, we can all go home now. But you only validate a fair process when you're able to convince the losing side
that it was
a fair race.
That's exactly it. Folks, we'll be right back with Dinesh D'Souza. Don't go away. And let me remind you, sign up, ericmetaxas.com, to get our weekly newsletter, ericmetaxas.com. Thank you. Folks, I'm back with Dinesh D'Souza. The question, of course, Dinesh, is what is at stake? This is not 1980 or 1984. What is at stake? You've written a book where you lay out where we are going if the Dems win this election and continue to pull us towards socialism. Tell us what the stakes are.
Well, I think that if Biden wins, we are going to be moving toward the United States of socialism. The pace or the degree, the speed can be debated. But that we will be moving in that direction, I think, is incontestable. And by socialism here, I don't just mean economic confiscation. If you read Marx, you think about socialism just in terms of money, the economic basis of society. But socialism today also refers to the attack on civil liberties, the attempt to impose a kind of conformity across the whole society. And that is really, I think, what is perhaps even more chilling. And it's not even some distant, faraway prospect, because these are things that we can see the beginnings of happening now.
There's no question. The title of your book is The United States of Socialism. We've had you on to talk about it, and I recommend it. But I've got to ask you, is it not plausible that China meddled in this election, that China desperately would wish Biden to win? Putin couldn't have cared less whether Trump won. But in this case, it seems to me that China, who have no principles other than power, that they would have done anything they could, whether electronically or through hacking, that they would have done anything they could to help Biden win so that they could have their way with a Biden presidency.
Without a doubt. And the Chinese interest is not only ideological, but also personal. They've got longstanding financial dealings with the Biden family. It may be an exaggeration to say that they consider Biden sort of bought and paid for, but there's no question that they have enriched members of the Biden family to considerable degrees over the years. The other factor, very closely related, radical Islamic intervention in American politics. This is a theme in our movie Trump Card, where we talk about the ways in which countries like Iran use intermediaries like Qatar to funnel large amounts of money to American think tanks, to American media institutions, to American civic groups, and also to American political candidates. They want to have the Ramadan prayer in the White House.
You know, I just don't want to believe that we have to fight these kinds of filthy battles. But it seems to me that until we get to heaven, on this side of the veil, we do have to fight these battles. Some people would like to shrug these things off as conspiracy theories. But the more time passes, the more I'm convinced that precisely what you have said and what others have been saying is happening. And we're fools not to think that the players on the other side of this, whether radical Islamicists or Chinese communists, wouldn't do anything and everything. They've murdered their own people. Why wouldn't they do this?
Well, most bad things that involve multiple people aren't conspiracy theories, but actual conspiracies. Now, if you look, for example, at the situation that happened with Russia collusion and the attempt to frame both Michael Flynn and Trump, there are two possibilities. Either Strzok and Page and Comey and Brennan and Clapper, all those guys went off on independent expeditions to do surveillance and so on, or somebody gave them the order. In other words, or there was a conspiracy. Somebody coordinated and directed that effort. I suspect the latter is true. This was a case where Hillary may have inaugurated the investigation and Obama gave the order. So that would take it out of the realm of a conspiracy theory and make it a conspiracy.
And there we have it. Dinesh, always a joy to have you on this program. Thank you for your time. In hour two, I have the joy of a lovely conversation with a lovely young woman, your daughter, Danielle, about her brand new book, The Choice. Thanks, folks, for listening, and thanks again, Dinesh.
My pleasure.